I just hit record. Sorry about that. So I'm Jacob Kruger, and I'm really excited to be speaking to you all today. First off, I want to say congratulations to all of you who participated in Table Read My Script, whether you were a winner, whether you were just a participant. Putting your work out there in front of other people is an incredibly brave thing, and completing a draft is an incredibly brave thing. And no matter how you did in the contest, one of the reasons that I've been a sponsor of the contest since its inception is that I believe that the idea of a table read is just so incredibly valuable for screenwriters. And one of the nice things is that even if you didn't win this contest, a table read is something that you can give yourself. You could put an ad on Craigslist and be swarmed with actors who are delighted to work for free. You can do it in your living room. Just make sure to have food and drinks for them. And you can give yourself the experience of hearing your work performed aloud, and you will be shocked at how much you learn, both about what is working with your script and what is not working with your script. So today, we're going to be talking about how to get producers and agents and managers on the phone, how to get past the gatekeepers so that you can make contact with the people that you need to reach in order to build your career. Once we get to the end of this conference call, I'm going to put it into question mode, and that will give you all a chance to ask any questions that you have. I'm going to try to get to everybody, but if I miss anybody, I'm also going to give you my email address right now. My email is Jake, J-A-K-E, at writeyourscreenplay.com, and I will always do my best to answer any questions that you have. So before we talk about getting people on the phone, it would be remiss of me not to give you a big warning, which is you don't want to get anybody on the phone until you have a script that is ready to go. You really only get one chance to make a first impression. And if you try to rush it, if you try to have a conversation with somebody before your script is really delivering at a professional level, the worst thing that happens is they can say yes. Because now what's happened is you've asked a very powerful person, somebody who could genuinely help you, to read a script that is not up to par. And a lot of people make mistakes when it comes to this because they see the really crappy movies coming out of Hollywood and they go, well, my movie's better than that. And what they don't realize is that the writers who are getting paid to write those really bad scripts are not really bad writers. That in fact, most of them broke into the industry with scripts that are fabulous, that have gotten screwed up in many different ways, oftentimes by people who have a lot of money and very little knowledge about how to develop a script. Sometimes by actors, sometimes by a bad director, sometimes by an awkward or bad development process. So the truth is, if you want to compete with the professionals, it's not enough just to write as well as the professionals. You actually need to be writing better than the professionals. Taking a risk on a young writer, a new writer, an emerging writer is dangerous for a producer. It's a big risk because it means that you're taking a risk on somebody who doesn't have a proven track record. So if you buy a script from some famous million-dollar a script writer and it gets made and it doesn't make money and your boss looks at you and says, well, why'd you hire this guy? You can say, well, his last movie made $100 million. If a producer buys a script from you as a new writer and it doesn't make money, then we have a much bigger problem, right? Because their boss is going to say, well, who the hell was this person? why did we spend all this money on this movie when we don't even know who this person is? So you need to understand that there is a genuine wall. There is a genuine wall of fear between you and selling your script. At the same time, you also need to understand that every producer in America, every agent, everybody is looking for a diamond in the rough. Everybody is looking for a writer like you, somebody who has something that nobody else knows about, that they can get, quite frankly, cheap. Everybody is looking to get in before everybody else is aware of you. Everybody's looking for that diamond in the rough. Because the truth is, very few producers actually get to look at good scripts. If you've ever worked as a coverage reader, you know that if you read 1,000 scripts, 999 of them are going to be terrible. And I'm not talking about scripts by new writers like you. I'm talking about scripts by working professional writers with agents and managers who are just throwing shit against the wall, writing a script in 12 weeks, blowing it out, throwing it against the wall to see if it sticks. So if you are able to write a truly producible script, a script that that anyone could look at and immediately go, oh, I know this could work. I could shoot this right now. I wouldn't need to develop it. I could cast it. There's a great role here. There's a great hook here. There's something really special here. The execution works. You're giving them a rare gift. And that's because you can kind of think of Hollywood like a giant shark tank. Imagine a tank of very hungry sharks and, excuse me, at the top of the tank are the great whites, the Steven Spielbergs, the Jerry Bruckheimers, the biggest of the big, the most famous of the famous. And what happens is the very best scripts in Hollywood go directly from CAA or other large agencies directly to these same big white sharks again and again and again, the very, very top. And what happens is those big whites, those great whites, they devour all the best scripts. They option them. They buy them. They develop them. And it's very few really great scripts that make their way down to the bottom. What actually happens instead is that most of the other sharks, and there are thousands of sharks in Hollywood, most of the other sharks don't get the scripts that you could shoot right now. They don't get the scripts that are truly working. They don't get the script that the writer spent 2 years of their life developing to perfection. What they get, if you think of scripts like fish that sharks eat, a couple of producers get to see all the real fish, and the rest of them, they don't really get a fish. What they get is like, here's an eyeball, and here is a skeleton, and here's a gill. And what they try to do is they try to take this little piece of a fish and somehow develop it to the point where it can become a real fish. That's what most producers are doing every day. It is very rare that a producer sees a real fish, especially the producers who are on the level that are looking at new writers. Which means that if your screenplay is a fish, meaning if your screenplay really is the complete package, people are going to pay attention. You are now no longer a, excuse me, you are now no longer a beggar. You are actually a chooser. The problem is that there are so many people peddling bad scripts that it can be a real challenge to actually stand out enough to say, hey, I've got a fish. I've got the thing here that you need and want. So we're going to talk today about how do you distinguish yourself? How do you help a producer see your script as a potential fish? How do you get past the gatekeepers who are there to keep you out? But again, before you do that, please make sure your script is ready. because it was bad enough when I was coming up before we had the internet. You could expose a bad script to one producer and no other producers would know about it. But now we live in a world where there are bulletin boards and coverage gets shared, and a bad script to one producer can really affect your chances with hundreds of others. So if you don't know if your script is working, then take a bunch of notes, but don't use this information yet. If you don't know if your script is working, the first thing you need to do is you need to get it to a point where you know it's working. You need to get professional feedback, and I'm not talking about feedback from coverage readers, and I'm not even talking about feedback from contests like Table Read. Because the truth is, a coverage reader gets paid about $50 a script. On a commercial level, you're usually paying about $150 for coverage, but the actual coverage reader is getting paid about $50 a script. For contests, they're getting paid even less. And when you think about what it would take you to read a script, write a good log line, a summary, and a commentary of that script, you'll realize very quickly that these coverage readers cannot actually read every script. That if they did, they would be making pennies on the hour. And you realize that what's actually happened is these coverage readers are skimming scripts. You do not want to leave the development of your script to a person who is willing to work for less than minimum wage. These coverage readers are not professional writers. They are certainly well-intentioned, but they are not people who are selling scripts, because let's face it, if you're selling scripts, there's no reason why you would be reading coverage for $50 a script. Which means that if you take the notes, if you take the feedback of coverage readers, you are very likely to get yourself into a lot of trouble. Because most likely you're taking notes, you're taking feedback from people who don't know much more than you do. I'm going to tell you guys a story. This is one of my students, Sujay Pandey. We'd been working on a script together for about 2 years. He's in our ProTrack program, which is a one-on-one mentorship program where we meet one-on-one with writers, and I pair them with professional screenwriters. In this case, I was working personally with Sujay. And Sujay had been putting about 2 years of work into his script, and he has a very specific aesthetic. Sujay writes broad comedies for 13-year-old boys. And if you are into that aesthetic, Sujay is really, really good at what he does. And if you're not into his aesthetic, you're not going to dig his writing. And he had submitted his script to a bunch of contests. And he got three different pieces of coverage back and called me up in a total panic. And he said, Jake, he said, I have one piece of coverage that says I'm hilarious, but my characters and my structure isn't good. I've got another that says my structure and my characters are good, but I'm not funny. And I have a third that says that I'm funny and I write good characters, but I have no structure. He's like, I don't understand how all three of these things can be true. And so what we did was we looked at those three different pieces of coverage, and we looked for any area where they all agreed. And what we found was that they didn't agree anywhere. Then we looked at all their notes, and we looked at the script, and we looked at, do we agree with the notes? Do we think they're saying things that are true? And we didn't agree. So I said to Sujay, you know what? Why don't you just keep sending exactly the same script around? And Sujay sent that script out, and he ended up winning the Canada International Film Festival with that exact same script. So one of the things that you must be aware of is that succeeding in this industry takes luck. You have to get the right reader on the right day. And that means that you've got to be tough with yourself. You cannot let everybody who's giving you feedback bounce you around like a pinball, because you're going to end up making your script worse by taking notes from people that are not worthy of your trust. If you're not sure if your script is there, you want to be working with a professional writer. If there's not a professional writer in your community, and when I say professional writer, I don't mean your friend in your writer's group who's written two more scripts than you. I mean somebody who has sold a script, who has worked in this industry, who really knows how this stuff works. And if there's not somebody in your network right now, then you can talk to me and I will be happy to pair you with one of our teachers who are all working screenwriters in this industry. So the first most important thing is that you want to make sure you've gotten professional feedback and your script is actually delivering what you believe it's delivering. The second thing is you need to be aware that you're going to get bad coverage no matter what. Every single studio passed on Star Wars. In fact, they thought so little of Star Wars that they gave a guy named George Lucas all the marketing rights, which turned out to be billions of dollars. Francis Ford Coppola had to mortgage his house to finish The Godfather. So when you think about this, you realize that you need a little bit of luck. You need to be strong with yourself. You need to trust your own instincts before you follow other people's instincts. And at the same time, you need to make sure that your pride isn't getting in the way. Because sometimes as writers, we start to think that everything we write is brilliant. And we can start to dismiss feedback by going, well, this person doesn't know what they're thinking about. So when you're getting feedback, you're looking for trends in feedback. You're looking for a lot of people saying the same thing. That doesn't mean they're right. And it often doesn't mean they're right about the fix. Usually their fix is wrong. But if you find the same trend happening with a lot of people, if a lot of people don't know what your main character wants, if a lot of people aren't connecting to your main character, if you've written a comedy and people aren't laughing when you hear it read aloud, if you've written a drama and people aren't crying when you have it read aloud, if you send your script to somebody and they read the first 10 pages and then they don't finish it, they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I got sidetracked. If these things are happening, you know you've got a problem. You don't want to listen to the fixes, but you do want to figure out what the real problem is. So, okay, let's assume your script is now ready to go. You've gotten some professional feedback. You've had a table read. You've asked the actors a bunch of questions. And most people, when they read it, if you say, what's the story about, they tell you the same thing. If you ask who the main character is and what do they want, they tell you the same thing. Your audiences laugh in the same places and cry in the same places. You know your script is working. Your script has been copy edited by a professional, so it doesn't have a bunch of little spelling errors that can get you dinged before you even have a chance. Another way of doing it, if you are in contests, if you're applying to a bunch of contests, and you are not at least getting to the second round in most of those contests, one of the things you can know for a fact is that you have a problem in your first 10 pages if you're not making it to the second round. And the reason you know that is that most contests are not reading the full script. They don't have enough manpower to read the full script. What most contests are doing is they're reading the first 10 pages, and those first 10 pages decide who gets into the second round. If you don't get into the second round of one contest, who knows? It might have just been a bad reader. But if you don't get into the second round in 10 contests, you know you have a problem in your first 10 pages. And if you have a problem in your first 10 pages in contests, you definitely have a problem in your first 10 pages for a producer. It means the producer is not going to finish your script. And it means that if it goes to a coverage reader, they're going to start skimming. Okay, so now that we've covered all that, let's assume your script is ready to go. How the hell do you get to the people that you need to get to? Well, step one is recognizing that if you try to get to everybody, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. Because your real job is to be a writer. And marketing your script also becomes a full-time job. And most likely, you also have a full-time day job. Which means that you need to get the maximum value out of every single contact that you make. You need to be reaching out to the right people, not to everyone. And when you do your research and you make sure you're reaching out to the right people, it also makes it a lot more likely that that person's actually going to want your script or respond to your script. And it also makes it a lot more likely you're going to get through the door. Because most people don't do any research. Most people are constantly just chomping at the bit. If you've ever been a producer, I don't know if any of you have ever worked as a producer, but it's a kind of crazy life because everybody wants something from you all the time. So often what happens is writers will bump into a producer, and the first thing that happens is a feeling of desperation wells up in you. You're like, oh my God, you're a producer. Can you help me? Please, please, please. Right? We start to get crazy. Instead of being good, nice, caring people, instead of going like, okay, well, what do you produce? We start to become used car salespeople when what we really want to be is Lamborghini dealers. And apologies to any used car salesmen in the audience. I'm sure there are a lot of really nice used car salesmen, but the stereotypical used car salesman, we think of somebody who doesn't really care what you want and doesn't really care what you need, who just wants to get you into whatever car they happen to have to sell. And that's the experience that most producers have. They're working with writers who really don't give a crap about them, who only care about selling their own script, who are acting like used car dealers. When the truth is, if you have a script that really is ready to go, you have a Lamborghini. You don't have a used car. And here's the thing about a Lamborghini. Not everyone can afford a Lamborghini. Not everybody wants a Lamborghini. But the people who do want a Lamborghini will pay just about anything for it. The people who do want a Lamborghini don't need to be sold. They're already looking for one. So the first step of your job is to identify who's looking for your particular Lamborghini. And the good news is there is a website called IMDb Pro that you can use right now to identify not only the actors, not only the agents and managers and producers, but also the actors and directors who are looking for movies like yours. IMDb Pro has a keyword search tool. And so what you can do is you can write down the theme of your movie, what your movie is really about. And you can then look for synonyms for that theme using a good old handy thesaurus. Thinking about if you're writing a movie about loss, you might also put in a theme like tragedy. You might also put in a theme like death of a child. You might also put in a theme like family heartache. So we come up with our main theme, and then we're going to come up with synonyms for that theme. And if you put that theme into IMDb Pro as a keyword, what will happen is it will bring up a ton of movies. Now, the first 10 listings, you'll notice that it says promoted next to them. Those listings are useless to you because those listings are people who are paying, excuse me, those are people who are paying to have their movies show up high in the list pretty much whether it makes any sense or not. But once you get past that initial group, you'll see a lot of movies. And if you make a little Excel document for yourself, you can start to sort those movies by the theme, by the director, by the producers, by the stars, and by the writers. And each of these categories gives you a different value. So what you're going to notice is that certain movies, the theme comes up, you see this guy's name once. But other actors, other directors, other producers, you're going to see their names come up again and again and again and again. These are your people. See, writing a movie is a crazy act. It's not a rational act. What you guys have done, I started off by saying how brave you are. What you guys have done is not rational. A rational person doesn't do what you've done. They don't dedicate years of their life and all those tears and all that suffering to write something that's in their heart and put it on the page with the chance that maybe they're going to sell it. That's not a rational act that you're doing. And that means that there is something powerful driving you. There is something from your soul driving you to do this crazy act that you do. That's called your theme. Not the theme that you planned, the theme that is going to be threaded through every single thing that you write. The theme that comes out, that bubbles out of your soul and makes it on the way to the page. And if you're really doing it, if you're writing for real, you've probably had the experience of you think you're writing a movie about one thing and then suddenly you go, oh my God, it's really about this. It's really about my relationship with my brother. It's really about my mom. It's really about my first love. You start to realize that, oh my God, this theme, this little silly comedy that I wrote is actually about loss. There's something beautiful and broken in you that turned you into an artist. And it's that beautiful and broken thing, that theme in you, that thing that you're wrestling with, the question that you don't know the answer to, that is where your voice comes from. The good news is there are other people like you who have the same beautiful broken piece in them. You can see this really easily with actors. George Clooney is such a great example. Think about pretty much every movie that George Clooney makes. Movie after movie after movie, it's always the same theme. The theme is, who is George Clooney? Fantastic Mr. Fox, who is Fantastic Mr. Fox? Michael Clayton, who is Michael Clayton? Up in the Air, who is, I don't remember his name, who is George Clooney? Who is George Clooney? The American, who is George Clooney? George Clooney loves making movies about identity. So if you've happened to make a movie about identity, there's a very good chance that George Clooney is going to respond to it. That doesn't mean you should go write a movie about identity to reach George Clooney. That means if what comes pouring out of your soul happens to be about identity, then George Clooney just might be your guy. So, just like actors have themes that drive them, producers have themes that drive them. The thing is that producers are not aware of their themes. Producers are aware of their charts and their figures and their MBA speak and their dollars and cents. That's what they're aware of. But having started as a producer, I can tell you the story about the guy that I used to work with, who would make all the same charts and all the same plans and then end up optioning the same movie again and again and again. Movies about parents who abandon their children. And he would option them again and again and again, despite all of his plans. He'd option them because they created an emotional response in him. Because here's the thing. A movie costs at the minimum about $1 million to make and at the maximum about $200 million. And there is no rational way to spend $1 million. There is no rational way to spend $200 million. You can make as many charts and graphs as you'd like. At the end of the day, spending that kind of money is an emotional decision. Taking a risk on a young writer is an emotional decision. That means if you're going to succeed, you've got to trigger that emotion. And what you trigger that emotion with is by sharing that emotion in you. Not by manipulating your audience or trying to write to the theme that you think is popular, but by taking a little bit of truth, opening your heart, putting your truth on the page in a way that makes other people not feel so alone. In a way that makes other people realize that we're part of a shared experience. So there's actually only one way that you can lose your theme. And the way that you lose your theme is by taking other people's advice. That's why if you're working with somebody good, and there are very few people who are good at this, but if you're working with somebody good, you will notice that the person giving you notes never gives you written notes. They don't give you a checklist of things to do. In fact, they don't tell you what to do at all. You'll find that if you're working with somebody good, that person is having a conversation with you. They're having a conversation with you about what you're trying to say. And then they're pointing you in the direction where you can make your own decisions in order to discover your own themes and bring them to the surface. So when you are reaching out to a producer, you want to reach out to the producers who keep on coming up around your keywords. When you're putting together your cast list, you want to put together your cast list based on actors who keep on coming up around your keywords. Why are you looking for writers? Well, writers have agents, and agents have themes. And so when you are looking for your agent, what you're going to notice is the same writers keep on coming up in your list. You want to look for their agents. Their agents are going to get you. Ideally, you want to be looking for writers who keep coming up, who are at a step, just one step ahead of you. So not the writer who's written 42 scripts. That writer's agent is too big for you. Even if you somehow worked your way onto their list, you're going to be the last person whose call they return. You want to be looking for the writer whose agent, who's just sold their first script, who's just had their first movie produced, the writer who just had their debut at Sundance. You're looking for the writer who's just one step ahead of you, and you're going to try to find their agent so that you're working with somebody where you can be one of the hot clients on their list rather than one of the little baby writers who's too small for them to actually service. So the first thing is you want to target around theme. And you want to narrow down your search. You want to get to the place where you have your top five directors, your top five producers, your top five agents, your top five stars. You want to boil it down so that instead of trying to reach out to anyone, you're just trying to reach out to one very specific someone. We live in probably the most exciting time ever to be a screenwriter. It's one of the most exciting times ever because we can afford to make our own movies. We can afford to make our own web series. We just had a student at Sundance whose movie got picked up for distribution, a little tiny independent film. So we live at a time now when you don't even have to wait for somebody to say yes. You can say yes to yourself. You can distribute your films on the internet. So first off, we live in a time when we're not so dependent on producers. When I was coming up, if you didn't have a producer, you could not survive. Today, you can make the web series version. You can make the two-minute trailer. And if you get enough hits, suddenly Hollywood comes a-knocking. So the other really exciting thing about this time is that we have resources, networking resources, that never have existed before. We have LinkedIn, and it is amazing. You can get almost anybody in LinkedIn, and if you request to be their friend, you will be shocked. They will often accept you, and if you send them a nice, short, sweet message, they will often respond. We have Facebook, where we can reach out to vast numbers of people, not to say, hey, does anybody know a producer, but to say, hey, does anybody know this producer? Because guaranteed someone within your 6 degrees of separation knows them, or knows their assistant, or knows their dry cleaner, knows someone who can make an introduction for you. When you say broadly, hey, does anybody know a producer? People go, well, even if I know somebody, I'm not going to make that introduction. But when you make the argument of like, hey, I have written a script that's perfect for this person. They've done this movie, this movie, this movie. This is similar to my movie in all these different ways. These movies have made this much money. I can see that I'm be a perfect match for them. I just need to get them on the phone. Suddenly, people feel a lot more confident making the introduction for you. It is always better to get an introduction than it is to make a cold call. So the first step is always to shake the tree of your own social network in order to get an introduction. It's important when that introduction happens that you don't waste anybody's time. If it's an email introduction, you want to get your ask right to the top. Do not send them a 3-page email, because what will happen is they will want to read it, but they won't. They will put it in their inbox to look at later, and they will lose track of it because it's too long. You want to have a killer version of your logline, and you want to start something like this. Hey, Jay Kruger suggested I contact you. I've written a script called blank. Bang, here's the logline. I think it would be a great fit for you because it's perfect for this actor who you've done a couple of different movies with. And it fits with this movie and this movie and this movie that you've made that have make sure you're listing movies that made money. Please let me know if you would be interested in reading. Nice, short, sweet saying. Basically, here's what it is. I know who you are, and this is why I think we're a good fit. Letting them know that you're not just another asshole wasting their time, that you actually have taken the time to do the research to make sure you're targeting the right person. The best way is always an email. I'm sorry. The best way is always an introduction. The best way is always an introduction. We live in a world where email is possible. One of the tricks you can use if you cannot get an introduction is most companies have email conventions, which means that if you can figure out the email of one person at the company, oftentimes you can find it on IMDb Pro, you can find the email of almost anyone. You can also speak to a low-level assistant, and if you find out how their email address is put together, you can often figure out how their boss's email address is put together. So, for example, at the studio, if you know Brent's email address, at my school, Brent's email address is brent@writeyourscreenplay.com. So, my admissions director, his email address is john@writeyourscreenplay.com. So what do you think my email address is? jake@writeyourscreenplay.com. If Brent's email address was brent_w@writeyourscreenplay.com, then most likely my email address is jake_k@writeyourscreenplay.com. Now that's not actually my email address. Mine is actually just jake@writeyourscreenplay.com. But the point is, if you can figure out the naming convention, there's a good chance you can guess their email. And if you're not sure, you can try a bunch of different emails, and oftentimes you'll find that there's one that does not bounce back. This means that you are living in a time when you can get to anybody, when you can find people on Facebook, where you can find people on LinkedIn, where you can figure out people's email addresses. This is incredible. There are also other resources that are hugely useful. One of them is Twitter. Twitter is amazing. There are people who tweet, and there are people who don't tweet. But the people who do tweet, if you follow them, if you participate with them, you can often just direct message them and say, hey, I follow you on Twitter. I have a script that I think would be perfect for you. Could I have 2 minutes of your time? Sometimes they will respond. Sometimes they won't. But we live in a time of unprecedented access. The last thing I'd like to say to you is I am a big proponent of using the phone. I was a big proponent of using the phone when I worked as a producer. I was a big proponent of using the phone when I worked as a writer, but I'm an even bigger proponent of using the phone now. Because we live in an age today where everybody is afraid to get on the phone. Everybody wants to email. Which means that the phones are not ringing as much. And the difference between phone and email is it is easier just to ignore an email than it is to just ignore a phone call. On the phone, you have the opportunity to build a relationship, which is something that you don't have in email. In email, if they don't respond, there's nothing you can do. But on the phone, you can build a relationship. It takes time. It takes perseverance. It takes some courage. But you can build a relationship. And the person you need to build a relationship is not necessarily the big-time producer. The person you need to build a relationship with is their assistant. Oftentimes, as screenwriters, we paralyze ourselves because we put too much pressure on that one phone call, on that one email. And I'm not alone. You're not alone in this. When I first started, I was so terrified of making phone calls. In order to make a phone call, I would pace for about an hour. I would practice. I would make notes. I would pick up the phone. I'd hang it up. I would have a cold sweat. I was so afraid of talking to people. Because I didn't realize, for me, it was really unusual. I was a guy who was used to being locked in a room with my characters. For me, it was really unusual to be on the phone. But for a producer's assistant, for an agent, for a manager, these people are on the phone all day, every day. Which means you are not a big deal to them. If you mess it up, it's just another call. You might remember it forever, but they're not going to remember it forever. If you sound really awkward, you're just another call. So you want to just think of it as, hey, this is just another call. You want to practice. Practice not with the top-end people. Practice with the bottom-end people. Practice with number 25 on your list, not number 1 on your list. Get used to talking on the phone. Practice pitching your script to everyone. Go to a bar. Pitch your script to 20 people. I know you're probably worried about it being stolen, but the truth is, if you've actually written a script that's ready to go, you know how many millions of decisions you had to make, how much work it took to actually execute your premise. So if somebody can execute your premise better than you, God bless them. Let them have it. The truth of the matter is, it's very hard to steal a script. And no producer who's worth their salt is going to steal a good script if they could just buy it. So go to a bar. Practice pitching your script. Pitch it to 30 people. You'll learn a lot about your script, and you'll learn a lot about your pitch. Get really comfortable talking on the phone. But don't get yourself into the situation of being a salesperson. Unless you are really good at sales. There are some people who just love sales, who are great at it. They feel great about it on the phone. Do not put yourself in that position unless you're great at sales. If you're not great at sales, like most writers, don't be a salesman. Instead, focus on building a relationship. Don't play the short game, play the long game, because here's the truth. You're not going to sell your script on the phone. You're not going to sell your script off of a pitch. It's not going to happen. The only thing that a call does is open a door for a relationship. And let me tell you one more thing, which is you're likely, even when you get your script to the person, even when it's the right person, even when it's the right script, you're likely not to sell that script to that person. Usually what that person's actually going to ask you is, what else do you have if they like your script? Because it takes a lot of factors lining up, a lot of luck, a lot of things that you can't control in order to get that sale. So instead of thinking of your call as the, oh my God, I have to sell my script call, think of your call as a place where you start to find the people in the industry who are your people, who are your generation, that assistant that you're talking about to, who is an assistant right now, someday is going to be running the company. You want to be building the long-term relationship. So let's talk about how you do that. Number one, you call the right people. You call the people who are looking for stuff like you. If you've written a horror script, don't call the producer who only writes romantic comedies. Don't try to shove your script down someone's throat when they tell you they're not interested. Instead, you want to think of every call you make as an opportunity to find a friend or a mentor. An opportunity to find the people in the industry who vibe with you. Because guess what? If they don't vibe with you, and you are lucky enough to sell your script to them, you are going to hate what they do with it. You want to be working with your people, and you want to be playing the long game. So this is how this works. You have to understand that the person you're calling, their job is to say no to you. It is their job to make sure that their boss does not get bothered by phone calls from people who aren't anybody yet. To make sure that their boss doesn't get inundated with more bad screenplays. So you need to understand that it's their job to make sure that you don't get in. But it's also their job, every single one of those people wants to find the diamond in the rough. They want to find the diamond in the rough because they want to show their boss how valuable they are. They want to convince their boss that they shouldn't just be an assistant, that they should be a director of development. That they have what it takes to identify young talent. That if they're an agent, they deserve a client list of their own. That they can start to handle some of that agent's smaller clients. That is what every assistant wants. So your job is to get past the gatekeeper function and turn these people into your allies. Let me tell you how you do that. Step one. You're going to act like you do this every day. So identify the person you really want to get to. You want to get to a person who can make a decision. You want to get to, don't go for the creative director. Go for the head of the company. That person is not going to answer their own phone. That person has an assistant. So on your first call, what you want to do is you want to just introduce yourself. You want to say, hi, this is Jacob Kruger. I'm calling to leave word for, enter the name of the producer. Leave word just basically means I know that he's not going to just pick up my call, but I'd like him to call me back at his convenience or her convenience. The person's going to ask you, what's it about? Give them the name of your script. And this is really important. When you call, don't use their last name. So if you're calling Jerry Bruckheimer, don't call and say, hi, I'm calling for Mr. Bruckheimer. Because when you say, hi, I'm calling for Mr. Bruckheimer, you're basically indicating to the assistant, I don't know this guy. Call and say, hi, I'm calling to leave word for Jerry. Because when you do that, what you're basically saying to the assistant doesn't know who the hell you are. They don't want to offend you. For all they know, Jerry had lunch with you yesterday. They don't want to offend you. They want to make sure that they're not going to upset somebody who's a big deal. So, hey, this is Jake Kruger, just calling to leave word for Jerry. By the way, what's your name? I haven't spoken to you before. And you're going to jot down their name. Oh, hi, Mike. How's it going today? How's your Monday? Awesome. Ideally, Mike gives you some information. If Mike's really good, he won't. He'll be very friendly. But in an ideal world, you find out that Mike loves the Knicks, or Mike loves figure skating, or whatever Mike loves. And if you do find that out, you're going to write that down in your notes, because next week you are going to watch the Knicks game, and you are going to call Mike and talk to him about it. But for this call is just about getting on the radar. So when Mike says, well, what's this about, Jake? You're going to say, oh, it's about, and you're going to tell him the name of your project. Like, it is just the most normal thing in the world. There is a chance that some assistants are great, a lot of assistants are not. If the assistant's great, they're going to immediately start to screen you out. So they might say something like, does he know what that is? Or, what's that? If they do, then you have to kind of test out in yourself what feels right. There are different schools of thought about how to handle this. I like to tell the truth. So I would probably say something like, it's a project that that I think would be great for Jerry, that I'd like to discuss with him. Other people would say, and this is, again, this is a risky choice. It's not what I do. Some people in that situation will say he knows. And the reason they say he knows is because if you say he knows, the assistant's going to go and talk to Jerry and going to say, hey, Jake Krueger called about name of the project. And Jerry's going to say, what the fuck is that? And the assistant's going to say, he said you knew. And now Jerry's racking his brain trying to remember who you are and what this project is. Now, it does mean that when he gets on the phone and he's like, I don't know who you are, he might be a little mad. And that's why I don't do it. But it is a technique that I have heard used in the past that is successful for some people. So you have to do what feels right for you. But really, for this call, you just want to get off the phone. So, calling to leave word, name of the project, great, look forward to hearing from him. Guess what? Jerry Bruckheimer is not calling you back. And that's just fine. Because you're not you're not really trying to build a relationship with Jerry Bruckheimer. You're trying to build a relationship with Mike. Because Mike controls every single thing that happens in Jerry's life. Mike controls what Jerry reads. Mike controls what phone calls Jerry responds to. And eventually, Mike is going to move up in Jerry's organization and become a big person. So in the long term, Mike is the ally you're trying to make. So next week, you're going to call Mike back. You're going to go, hey, Mike, it's Jake Krueger. Oh, my God, did you see the Knicks game last night? Oh, my God, amazing. You're going to try to connect with Mike. If you didn't connect with Mike last time, you're going to go, hey, Mike, it's Jake Krueger, like you know him. How was your weekend? Ask him what he did. Write it down. That's what you're going to talk to Mike about next time you call. Again, don't make a big deal out of it. Don't get offended. Hey, just calling to leave word for Jerry. It's about this project. Great. Thank you very much. Look forward to hearing from him. Don't worry, Jerry's not calling you back. Next week, you're going to talk to Mike again. You're going to try to have a little bit of a deeper conversation. Try to make Mike laugh. Be nice to Mike, because the truth is most people are screaming at Mike all day. After you've done this for about a month, you now have a relationship with Mike. Mike now gets that you're calling. You're on his radar. You're not some rando calling trying to get in. You're an acquaintance. At this point, you might say something to Mike like, look, I know how busy Jerry is, but I have a project that I think is really great for him. So if there's anything you can do to get me to the top of the list, I'd be really grateful. I need about 2 minutes of his time. That 2 minutes is really important because it basically shows that you're not going to waste a bunch of his time, that you're aware that his time is valuable. You could say 2 minutes, you could say 5 minutes, you could say 10 minutes. You're just basically saying, hey, I just want to get him real quick. Most likely, he's still not calling you back. So at that point, when you call Mike back, it's now been about 6 weeks, you have a real relationship, you have like a friendship. And you say to Mike, okay, Mike, I can see the man's not going to call me back. Can I take you out for lunch and pitch the script to you? Now, there's a good chance at this point that Mike might say yes. Mike might say yes because you just offered to take him out for lunch, and how often does Mike get to go out for lunch? Mike may say yes because you have a relationship with him. It's also possible that Mike might say no. And if he says no, the way he's going to say no is like this. Mike's going to say, I'm so sorry, Jake. We don't accept unsolicited submissions. Now, you need to know as a writer why Mike is saying this. Mike is saying this because his boss is terrified of being sued. Because all kinds of crazy people send scripts to these producers unsolicited, And if that producer happens to have anything similar in development that ever gets made, then they can prove that that producer had access to their ideas and they could potentially shut down the project. So producers are terrified of being sued. So there are a couple of ways that you can make this a little bit easier. The first way is just simply saying to Mike, hey, Mike, I know. If you want, I'm happy to submit it through my lawyer. This makes Mike realize that you're the real deal. You actually have a lawyer. You're working in this industry. And the great news is you can hire an entertainment lawyer and you can pay them an hourly fee to send your script. Lawyers also know people. So oftentimes you can, by paying for that hour of time and hiring a lawyer, you can actually get access to your lawyer's contacts. And if the lawyer believes in you, sometimes they will help you get your script to the right person. So one thing you can say to Mike is, hey, Mike, no problem. I can submit through my lawyer. You can also tell Mike, hey, Mike, I'm happy to sign any document that you need me to sign. I know I've been to this rodeo before. And if you do that, and if Mike is amenable, Mike is going to send you a document that is the most horrific contract you have ever read. It's basically going to say, look, you can, if we steal your firstborn child, you can't sue us. It's going to be a terrifying document. And I can't give you legal advice because I'm not a lawyer. But what I've done in my own career is I've signed those documents. And the reason that I sign those documents is I figure I'm a lot better off taking the risk of my work being stolen than I am not getting my script to someone who could potentially buy it. Because I think, hey, if I was Jerry, I'm cheap. If I'm a young screenwriter, I'm cheap. Even as an established screenwriter like me, I'm way cheaper than defending the lawsuit. And the truth is, if I'm good, Jerry's going to want me to do the rewrites. Jerry's going to want to read my next script. Jerry has very little reason to steal my script. Now, the guy on Craigslist, that guy will sell your script, steal your script. That guy doesn't know what he's doing. But a real producer is not incentivized to steal. Now, I'm not saying they never do. There are crazy people in the world. But I think it's a calculated risk. So in the best case scenario, Mike says, okay, cool, I'll send you a release, send it along. In the worst case scenario, Mike is going to say, I'm so sorry, Jake. They don't let us, not even through lawyers, not even through, not even with release. There's just no way. I can't do it. I'd lose my job. In which case, you say, okay, Mike, can I ask you a favor? And Mike says, what? And you say, Mike, would you please solicit my submission? Because I have a project that is perfect for you, that Jerry is going to love, that's going to make you look like a superstar. I'm not just throwing shit up against the wall to see if it sticks. You're the only people I'm calling. I've called you every week because I know it's right for you. Will you please solicit my submission so I can send you my script? Usually, Mike will laugh at this point. He may still not be willing to solicit your submission. And if he says no, you say, okay, I guess I'll talk to you next week. Again, you don't get angry. You don't get upset. Mike is just doing his job. And what you're really trying to do is you're trying to build a long-term relationship with Mike. So next week, you're going to call back. And you just laugh. Mike, you know who it is. It's Jacob Kruger. Still just trying to get on the phone with Jerry. I just need 10 minutes of his time. Mike's going to say, Jake, I told you, we can't solicit unsolicited submissions. And at this point, you now have a two-month-long relationship with Mike. You guys are friends. You're joking. It's kind of become a joke that you're going to keep on calling. So you say to Mike, look, I know, as much as I enjoyed talking to you and you enjoyed talking to me, that you would probably like me to stop calling. But I'm not going to stop calling until I at least get a chance to pitch you the script. Can I take 2 minutes of your time right now? I will pitch you the logline. If you really don't think it's a match for you, you'll never have to hear from me again. If he says no, you go, hey, look, okay, so let me ask you. If you were in my shoes, you're a young writer, you know you've got the right script, you know you've got the right producer, you're You know the script is ready. You put 2 years of your life into it. You just need to get to the right person. You know you need to get to Jerry. How would you do it? And then you shut up and you make him talk. He's going to say something like, I don't know. I don't know what I do. You say, well, look, Mike, you know a hell of a lot more about this than me. How would you do it? What would you do in my situation? Then he's going to give you advice. Hopefully he'll say you'd have to have it come through an agent. In which case you would say, okay, who do you like? Is there a young agent that you like working with who's representing agents, people at my level? And Mike's going to say, yeah, you know, Joe Smith over at Endeavor, he's a lovely guy. I love working with him. And then you're going to say to Mike, hey, Mike, and if I was to get Joe over at Endeavor to represent me, you would then be willing to take a look at my script? Yes. Then you're going to ask Mike, Mike, can I mention your name when I call? So what you've just done is you've turned Mike into a mentor. You've realized that you're not going to get through to Mike, but you've now allowed Mike to give you a piece of advice. And by now, look, if you did this on day one, you would never, ever, ever get anything out of Mike. But by this point, you have a relationship with Mike. If Mike says, no, you can't mention my name, it's fine. But chances are Mike's going to say, sure, fine, mention my name. So now you're going to call Joe Smith over at Endeavor. And you're going to go, hey, Joe over at Jerry Bruckheimer, or Mike over at Jerry Bruckheimer's office suggested that I give you a call. And you're going to play the same game with his assistant. But now you're not a cold call anymore. You're an introduction. So this is how you play the long game. The goal is to build the relationship, not make the sale. You always want to be friendly. You don't want to take it personally. You don't want to get upset. I'm going to teach you one last trick, and then I'm going to open it up for questions. And this is the most powerful trick I have. And if you use this trick, you will be shocked at how much it works. But don't use this trick until you're ready. The trick is to call late. You want to call late at night. Call after 7 p.m. Call like 7:30 or 8 o'clock. The reason you're going to call late is that a lot of these producers are, believe it or not, nice people. And they know that their assistant is making minimum wage. And around 7 o'clock, they're still working, but they'll say to their assistant, you know what, why don't you go home? So when you call 7:30, 8 o'clock, there's a good chance that Jerry himself will pick up the phone. And if that happens, you'll know. Because instead of saying, hello, Jerry Bruckheimer's office, he's going to go, hello? Because these people don't know how to answer their own phones. They're used to having assistants do it. Now you know you're talking to the real person. In which case you go, oh my God, Jerry, I hope I haven't interrupted you. This is Jacob Kruger. I was expecting to speak to Mike. I wonder if I could have 2 minutes of your time. And what you're done now is you basically, who's not going to give you 2 minutes of your time? You've already got him on the phone. And you're going to use that 2 minutes to pitch Jerry your script. I had a student who did this. It was her very first call. She didn't believe it was going to work. She got a huge producer on the phone. And she had a script that was ready to go. But she was so surprised that it worked that when he said, sure, what can I do for you? She said, can I send a query letter? And he said, yes. And then she sent a query letter and ended up just in the same pile as everybody else. You want to use that moment to pitch your real script to this real person. You want to have a really strong pitch that you have practiced, and you want to know that you have a script that's going to deliver what you promised. That person can actually accept your script. If the person says no, if they don't like your pitch, don't try to convince them that they're right, that you're right. Instead, don't try to force it down their throat. Instead, turn them into a mentor. Say, hey, Jerry, I get it. You're not looking for a zombie movie right now. No problem. What would you do if you were in my shoes? Can I just pick your brain for one moment? What would you do if you were in my shoes? You're a young writer. You've put the work in. You've got a zombie movie that's in the vein of this movie that made a lot of money. You know someone's going to make a ton of money on it. Who would you bring it to? And then you're going to play the same game of, can I mention your name when I call? Once you get that one little yes, it doesn't matter what the yes is. Once you get that one little yes, you've got to get off the phone. You got to say, thank you so much, Jerry, or thank you so much, Mike, or thank you so much, Joe, whoever you're talking to. Thank you so much. If it's an assistant, send them not something crazy. Send them, like, some cookies and a nice little handwritten note. If it's not an assistant, just send them a nice little handwritten note just saying, hey, it means so much to me that somebody of your level would take a few minutes to mentor somebody at mine. You send them a nice little handwritten note. You on the phone, you say, thank you so much for your time. I'm so grateful. I will check in and let you know how it goes. Once you get the yes, you want to get off the phone. Okay. So I'm now going to open this up for questions. If you have a question, you can hit *6 on your keypad, and that will put you into the queue. So I don't see any questions yet. So somebody go ahead and hit *6, and that will put you into the queue. Okay, wonderful. Here's somebody.
Yeah, hi, Jake. Thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Who am I speaking to?
I'm so sorry. My name is Melanie. How are you?
Hello, Melanie. I'm fantastic.
I'm in a situation right now that is pretty exciting. I have a script that's won or placed very highly in a lot of competitions, and I have a couple of major producers and a top-level agency and actress interested in my script.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is on the table yet in terms of a deal, but there's a few people on the hook, which is lovely. So what I want to know is, as I'm having these conversations, I have a couple of calls coming up the next few days. How candid should I be as the writer in between, when I'm being bounced along these different producers, like when someone says, well, who else have you sent it to? How much should I be willing to share, and how much should I protect my own interests?
That's a really great question. and there's not a clear right or wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
My belief is always I like being forthcoming.
Right.
I always feel like nobody likes to be lied to.
No.
So what I'm usually going to say is if I've sent it to a couple of people, mm-hmm. I would usually say, hey, look, I'm shopping this right now to whoever's interested, and they're definitely, I'm getting a bunch of nibbles. If you have somebody big, you want to mention their name because it makes it exciting. Steven Spielberg's interested.
Okay.
great. Say it. Everyone wants whatever Spielberg wants. Mm-hmm. So if you have smaller names, you just say, look, I'm actually speaking to a bunch of producers and a bunch of agents, and I'm, obviously the money is important to me, but what's more important is I'm really trying to find the person who is making the same movie I'm making.
Right.
In general, it's always my feeling that people get excited when they feel like lots of people are into it.
Sure.
But I don't like to bullshit people. So if I don't have anybody else interested, I'm not going to say no one else is interested. I'm going to say, look, you're the first person I'm bringing this to, and the reason that you're the first person I'm bringing it to is because of this, this, and this, and this. I think you're the perfect person for it. And, but if I've got a bunch of people interested, I'm going to say, yeah, I haven't gone out wide with it, but I've brought it to a select few people who I think would be a good match. And, mm-hmm. You're certainly, somebody very high on the list for me.
Okay. All right. So it's, in other words, it's really, I guess, up to the individual person how much you want to divulge. But I'm totally with you as well, and I think it's important to, mention certain people, and especially if there's a lot of traction at the moment, it obviously looks good on you as well.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Agents like to play games with this kind of information. And if you have an agent, let them play the games. Mm-hmm. But my feeling is always if you're not an expert, be honest about it.
Okay.
Hey, this is my first script. It's really exciting. All these people are interested. This is all really new for me. And, I really just want to get to know you and understand what you want to do with the project and let them sell you, especially in this kind of situation. It's exciting. It means that there's more than one person interested. Mm-hmm. And that means that you actually get to choose the person who feels right. And
right.
so don't choose money in this situation unless you don't like any of them. If you don't like any of them, pick whoever's offering you the most money. But if you like some of them, you want to really be asking them questions. Ask them not just the things they like about the script. Ask them the things they don't like about the script. If you're meeting with an agent, ask them what their approach to building your career would be. Where do they see you working? What would they need from you? What do they not like about your writing? Where do they think you need to grow? Asking those kinds of questions will help the producers, because producers love to tell you how much they love things, and then you find out how much they want to change. So you're always better knowing that information up at the front and showing them that you're really open to hearing exactly what they want from the story.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Melanie. Congratulations and good
Thank
luck with
you.
Everything.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hello, who am I speaking to?
My name is Mark. My name is Mark Kelly.
Hello, Mark.
I actually have two questions. The first question I was going to email to you, which was when I mailed my script into Table Read My Script, I thought I was at least going to get a recording of a table reading back. Did they just go through a selection and say, okay, this person gets table read and that's it?
My understanding, I'm not actually involved with Table Read except as a sponsor. But my understanding is that the table read only goes to the person who is the grand prize winner.
I see. Okay, and then the other question I have is I'm trying to break into animation. My
yes.
script is basically The Lion King, but with Wolfpack,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to shop that around. And is there any particular foible or pitfall that I'm going to hit if and when I get to the point where I am going to be approaching the film, you know, whoever makes the film eventually?
Yes. So when it comes to animation, it's very interesting. Some animated producers are very interested in seeing animated scripts. Other animated producers, I just recently had a conversation with a high up, like young producer, but like an up and comer at Sony, and who works in their animation department. And one of the things that he was saying was, he's like, yeah, sure, I'd love to read an animation, but I would be just as happy writing a thriller. He said, there are two things that he's looking for. He's looking for people who write great characters, and he's looking for the way you put your visuals onto the page. This is something that doesn't really get taught well, and even a lot of professional scripts are not that strong with the visuals. But animation, those scripts go through sometimes 4 years of revisions, and all they're looking for is literally visualizing each moment, moment by moment. So a great animation script is going to play like in the movie screen in the person's mind, like pretty much shot for shot. We actually have a pretty great class about this. It's one of our advanced classes. It's called Write Your Screenplay Level 2, The Art of the Craft. And you can read about that on my website. But it really focuses on how to get those kinds of really powerful images on the page in a way that actually hypnotizes your reader, that actually causes them to stop reading it and to see the movie play out in their mind's eye. But those are the two things that in animation people are most likely to be looking for.
Okay. Are you still hearing me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. Well, then that brings me to another question. When I was on other screenplay, other screenwriting classes that I've been taking have told me, don't try to do the director's job for it, or the casting director's job. They say, so leave out the shots, leave out the, is that good advice or bad advice?
It is good advice with a caveat. So whenever you're taking a screenwriting class, you must research the teacher. You'd be shocked. A lot of people teaching very expensive screenwriting classes, even at some of the top universities, are not actually working screenwriters. They're critics. They're people with MFAs in screenwriting or MFAs in film studies. And they're very brilliant people, but a lot of them don't really know how the industry works. So you have to be very careful who you're studying with. if you write a lot of shots, if I write the camera does this, what happens is any good director is just going to cross it out. They don't like to be told what to do. And for the reader, if I say camera shots, especially if I'm dealing with an inexperienced coverage reader, that person's going to, if I say camera, they see a camera, and that pulls them out. Or if I give them a really fancy shot, they might not even know what that really looks like. And God forbid I get the shot wrong, now they're laughing at me and I'm looking like an amateur. So your job is not to capture shot for shot. What your job is to do is to hypnotize the reader in the way you put the language on the page so that they actually see it in their mind's eye, so that it's like the movie is playing there. So what you're really thinking is, like, what exactly are they seeing in what order? And you're not trying to give, like, moment by moment. You're trying to give, like, the greatest hits moment so that the reader doesn't have to work so hard to see. The truth is there are very few people teaching this because it's really hard to teach and it takes a lot of time to learn. So what happens is a lot of teachers will just kind of skim over this stuff. Oftentimes they don't even know it themselves. If you read a lot of professional scripts, you'll see that a lot of writers are really bad at this. But if you read a script that does this well, in animation, I would look at Frozen. The script for Frozen, I don't love the film, but the script is so brilliantly written. I would look at the Lego Movie. These are examples of writers who are really at the top of the game, who are, they're not directing on the page, but they're writing the script in a way that it really does play out in the mind's eye of their reader.
Okay, can you still hear me?
Yes, I'm going to have to move on to the next question, but if you do have other questions, feel free to email me. It's jake@writerscreenplay.com. Hello, who am I speaking to?
Hi, Zane Bray.
Hello, Zane, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. My question is, when you're pitching to the producers, would you try to focus on just one producer, or would you try to hit a multitude of producers that shoot movies the same as your script?
It depends on how much time you have. And it depends on how robust your social network is. Personally, I like to start, I like to spend my time writing. So I'm more likely, and I think it's easier to ask people for one thing than it is to ask for seven things. So for me, I'm more likely to pick whoever is the top of my list and really shake the tree of that social network. I'm also very comfortable pitching, though. I've been pitching for most of my life. So if you're not comfortable pitching, you may actually want to start with some colder calls to people who are really unlikely, who are on the list, they're on your theme, but they're not necessarily your top people, so that you can kind of practice this stuff before you start making the request to get to somebody who's really high up on your list.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Awesome. All right, thanks so much. Do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I was just wondering, I have won a couple awards and some screenplay contests. Does it help to mention that?
I think it's great. Now look, there are producers who are assholes. So there are some producers that are going to say, I've won four contests, and they're going to say, big whoop, I don't give a shit. And a lot of that's, look, there are good contests and there are bad contests, and a lot of producers have been burned by contests where, like, somebody wins one and then they request a script and the script is not even producible. And so, there are certain contests that mean a lot and there are certain contests that mean a little, but I think, hey, if you've got four wins, if you got 10 wins, if you've got, eight wins and three nominations, when it starts to add up, it does make a producer feel safer that at least somebody liked this, that you've gotten some feedback. You'll also find if you start to participate in a lot of these festivals that, and a lot of these contests, that if you're winning a lot, that you start to actually get some phone calls.
Okay.
Great. Beautiful.
No, thank
Thanks
you.
So much, Zane. Hello, who am I speaking to? Hello?
Jacob.
Hello.
Hello, Steve Biggs here.
Hello, Steve.
I'm just going to say thank you. The last gentleman asked a question that I was going to ask, so...
Oh, cool.
I'll just say, hey, thanks, this has been great, and sign off.
You're so welcome. It's my pleasure. Hello, who am I speaking to?
Hey, this is Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, thanks for the talk tonight. It's been really great.
My pleasure.
Hey, I was had a question. I have the rights to a book that I've been adapting for the past year, almost year now, and I'm getting it to a spot where I think I might be ready to send it out, and it's been in development before at a few production companies and some pretty big distribution companies, mm-hmm. but I guess I don't know, like, how far they got with their scripts or how far that went, but I do know the names of, like, the producers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So my question is, should I approach them with my version of it, or are they going to not be the ones to take it to?
You know, that's a really excellent question. I don't actually know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what I would do. You know, I would probably figure it can't hurt. The reason I don't know the answer is it's very possible that they already have a bad taste in their mouth about this. That, you know, if they've already optioned it and it didn't work out, they may have already exposed it. They may have really struggled to come up with a script. So they may already have a bad taste in their mouth. But, you know, there's a good chance that I would do it, that I'd be like, hey, I saw that you'd optioned this a couple years ago. I don't know if it's something you're still interested in, but I've got a version of the script that I think is really great, and wondering if you'd want to take a look at it. That's definitely a way to go. If you have any agents or managers or producers in your network, you may want to kind of bounce that question off of them first, because they might have a different take than I have. I don't have a lot of experience working with scripts in turnaround. I've never actually done that myself. So that's why I'm not exactly sure how to answer the question.
Okay, great. But like the example that you just kind of did with how you would call them, is that how you would
That's how I'd handle it. I would just be like, okay. Hey, you know, I don't know if this is something you're still interested in, but I think you're an awesome producer, and I know you guys were involved in the past, and I'm curious if you'd like to take a look.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You could also use that to kind of feel them out. If they say no, you go, well, I'm curious, since I've invested in this, I'm curious, where did you strike out? Like what made you lose interest? Because they might be able to say, we brought it to these places and none of these people were interested, and then it saves you the wasting your time doing it.
Oh yeah, that's a good way to go about it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, good. Good luck with it. Let me know how it goes.
Thank you.
Hello, who am I speaking to?
Yeah, you've got Lane Bristow.
Hello, Lynn.
Lane. No worries. I was just wondering, obviously a very novice screenwriter, I've got several that have been nominated by some larger competitions, and that always feels good, but the biggest gatekeepers I've been running into is, you know, trying to get an agent. Is that,
yeah.
How essential would you consider that to be?
I don't consider it essential at all.
Cold calling thing.
I don't consider it essential at all. At this point in your career, honestly, you're going to get an agent when you sell something yourself.
Exactly.
Okay. Unless they're calling you. And that's really what you want. You want the agent calling you.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would be doing is I might be looking for a lawyer so that you have somebody who can follow up and send the script for you. So when somebody calls, you go, hey, when you call somebody, you say, hey, I want to know if you'd be interested. I have my lawyer send the script over for you. It just makes it seem like you're kind of in the industry. And mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, what I would probably be looking for is, at this point, I'd be looking for a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Managers are much more likely to be kind of looking to develop young talent than agents who are really looking for, you know, the quick sale.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was looking for representation, I'd be looking for a manager. But I don't think this is essential at all. You can also look for agents who are willing to hip pocket you. And what hip pocketing means is, look, I'm not ready to represent you yet. I'm not willing to go into a contract that basically requires me to get you work. But I think you've got some talent. So basically, if you call me up, I'll be happy to put my covers on your script and take a call on your behalf. And then if something happens, I become your agent. Uh-huh. So, but my feeling is an agent at this point is really not going to do any work for you. They're just going to give you some credibility. Uh-huh. So what I would really be thinking is, like, who are the producers? Who are the people who would be interested in the script? And then when somebody's interested, then it's easy to get an agent because you call them up and you go, hey, look, this person wants to buy my script. I just need someone to negotiate the deal. And anyone would like to make 10% for doing nothing.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. That's
beautiful.
That's very helpful, actually. Thank you.
All right, great. Good luck with it, Lane. So I'm going to take two more questions, and then if anyone else has questions, you can email me at jake@writeyourscreenplay.com. Also, if you are interested in studying with me, I have classes in New York City, live online, and one-on-one mentorship, as well as international retreats in Costa Rica. We also do a TV retreat in Vermont. So if you're interested in any of that, I also have a free podcast that you can listen to, and that's all on my website, writeyourscreenplay.com. So, hello, who am I speaking to?
Hi, yes, my name is Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Hi, thank you very much for your insightful information.
You're so welcome.
So my situation is I have a World War II thriller script.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on true events, and it's been receiving great feedback from industry professionals. And the producer, she contacted me about 2 months ago, and she said she wanted to make the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been 2 months, and I followed up with her just once, and I still haven't heard back.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, like, what the best concourse is to take. I have a top manager. I just heard tonight he said he wants to read the script, which is great. And then an agent in L.A. when I was out there who I networked with, he said, you know, he would read it. So I just sent him the script, and I put a lot of work into it. I really polished it, and I feel it's a great sample, and I've been told that. But I feel like I'm not getting a whole lot of traction because it's a medium budget, probably like $30 to $50 million in
yeah.
for a spec period piece. I think that's, I know it's very difficult unless,
yes.
you know, I'm working with like Clint Eastwood or someone like that.
They're all difficult. So I don't worry about that stuff. There's no such thing as an easy movie. So what I would say is, look, first off, this is normal. I get these questions probably like 3 or 4 times a week. This producer says they want to make it. Now they're not returning my calls. Oftentimes, honestly, they are just plain busy. And you are low on their totem pole. So what I like to do is just keep on checking in once a month. I like to call. I think emails are easy to ignore. So I would give a call to leave word and just say, hey, you know, I'm sure that you got a million things on your plate. You know, I'm obviously, you know, was very excited when you said you wanted to make the movie, and I just want to make sure that we're still moving forward because, you know, obviously I don't want to expose it to anybody else if you're interested, but, you know, if that's changed, then I would want to know. Or you can just be even nicer and just be like, hey, just calling to check in, see how we're doing, if there's anything I can do to help move it along. In the meantime, while the person's still at yes, first off, it's great that this manager is interested, and I would just keep on reaching out. I would kind of build my list of managers that I was interested in, and I would be reaching out to a lot of them and saying, like, hey, I have a producer who's you know, told me that she's interested in making it. You know, I need some help pushing it along with her, and, you know, don't be afraid to mention her name. As long as it's true that she's said she's interested, you can certainly put her name out there. And, you know, this is a great time while you're still at yes to be reaching out to people who then can be a little tougher than you can. As a writer, it's really hard to be tough with producers. Managers, agents, they often have relationships with these producers where it's easier for them to say, hey, you're going to call me back or what? Where it's really hard for you to do that. So what I'd say is, keep just check in once a month really nicely. If you really start to feel like this is taking too long, ideally you have your manager at that point and your manager can threaten to pull it. I don't like to do anything that's even remotely pushy myself, but if you don't have a manager at that point, you know, you can have the conversation where you say, hey, look, you know, I would never want to expose a script to somebody else that was with you that you say you want to make, but I haven't heard from you for 4 months and I don't know where we are. So, you know, if I don't hear from you in 2 weeks, then I am going to start shopping it to other producers. You could do that in a kind of nice way where it doesn't seem like you're being pushy, but I would really want a manager to take care of that for me, or an agent.
Is it very difficult for somebody to get a manager, especially with the spec period piece, because they all think they can't sell it?
Well, look, a manager, right now you already have a producer interested, so I don't think the manager is going to be afraid that they can't sell it. I would certainly want to have at least 2 writing samples, you know, because you want to be able to prove that, you know, basically they're going to get you a lot of work, hopefully doing rewrites, and people, or work for hire stuff, and people always want to see 2 writing samples. So, you know, ideally you have 2 really solid scripts in the bank. But I would be less worried about can they sell it. You've already proven that it's marketable. You have somebody who's interested in making it. So, you know, let them tell you it's hard to sell. And when they say it's hard to sell, you say, hey, look, this is not the only script I have, but, you know, just, you know, so you know, this producer, it's with them right now, and they say they want to make it. So I think you have an answer to that question right now.
Okay, that's great, because right now I have about half a dozen scripts I've been working on.
Perfect.
And they're in really good shape, and I know the right people who I need to get the script to, and I've been focusing on those lower-level producers.
Great.
And querying them. But the thing is, some of the companies that I know would be ideal are companies that are bigger, that don't take, you know, unsolicited, you know, queries.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm struggling, because it's like...
Well, practice, pick one of them and practice that calling trick that I just taught you. If you end up getting rejected, it doesn't matter. You don't have an in there anyway. But again, I would focus on a manager, because with a manager, managers are interested in developing your career, not just selling a script. And that manager can very easily call those production companies on your behalf. You've already done the work for them. And this is what managers want and agents want. They want a writer who's like, hey, here are the 5 people I need to get to. Who do you know? As opposed to who should I bring this to? So you're basically showing them that you're a high-end client. You're somebody who can make a sale on your own. You're doing the legwork for them. You're totally prepared. You got a half a dozen scripts that are ready to go. You are an ideal client for a manager right now. So, yeah, don't let anybody tell you it's hard. Of course it's hard. It's all hard. But... if you're capable of writing the kind of scripts that draw people's attention like that, then you have something really valuable.
Okay, well, thank you very much for all your time. I truly appreciate it.
You're so welcome, Lisa. Good luck with everything. All right, last question. Who am I speaking to? Hello?
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 This is Ruby from New York City. How are you?
Hello, Ruby. How are you?
Pretty good. I just have a question. I have a producer. I have a shopping agreement with a producer.
Ruby, are you on a speakerphone? It's a little hard to hear you.
I am on my computer.
Okay.
Is it better?
We're going to try. I'll try to listen as well as I can. So keep going.
So I have a shopping agreement with a producer,
mm-hmm.
and I just ScriptFest just had like a screenwriting competition, like their first one,
mm-hmm.
and I made it as a finalist.
Congratulations!
Thank you. And so I'm wondering, I've never been to PitchFest before.
Yeah.
How is that going to work? Even though I have a producer, you know, shopping it around for me, can I still pitch it at PitchFest?
Well, what I would do, I would call that producer. It will be great news for that producer to hear that you were a finalist in the festival. That's great. That's exciting news for them and a feather in their cap. I always believe you're only as good as your relationships. And if anything, if you have ever any doubts about whether you're doing the moral thing, and I know that most people in this industry are not moral, but if you ever have any doubts that you're doing the moral thing, then you know you're doing the wrong thing. So just the fact that you're asking the question means that you're not sure whether this is right or wrong. And so what I would be doing is I would be reaching out to that producer, and I would be saying, hey, look, I just won this festival. I have an opportunity to go to this pitch fest and pitch some big people. But I just wanted to talk strategy with you. Obviously, I don't want to do anything that would get in the way of your plans. So if you want me to focus on different projects, I'll talk about different projects. But if you'd be comfortable, there might be some really great people that we could pull in there. And then just let them guide you.
Okay.
Now, let me give one caveat. If you hate the producer you're working with right now, it's better to beg. It's better to be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't think you'd be upset. So if you feel like the producer that you have to deal with right now is not doing their job, or if you don't have faith in them, or if you don't like them, then you might be better asking for forgiveness. You might be better off just going and doing it, and then if they get upset, you go, oh, my God, I thought you'd be happy. I'm pitching it to this great person. Just make sure when you pitch that person, you do let them know there is a producer attached.
Well, but that can only help to let them know that I actually have a producer.
It may or may not help. It may or may not help. And, again, this really depends on what your relationship with them is, but some producers will be excited to know there's somebody else involved, but oftentimes they're only excited if that person's bringing money. So oftentimes a producer who has a shopping agreement is actually not bringing money. They're looking for money. And so they can be an so to somebody, like if you bring it to a really big producer and you've got a really little producer involved, they look at that little producer as like just another mouth to feed. Because they don't, you, at where you are right now, that person feels like they could help you. But if you're pitching to somebody really big, that person is not necessarily somebody who can help. That person just might be more encumbrance financially for them.
I have a few months left on the shopping agreement. So I guess that's another issue altogether.
Okay, so that's another issue altogether. So, you know, I would still talk to, if you value that relationship, you want to talk to that person.
I mean, you know, it's the fair thing to do. I've never been in that situation, so I was curious.
Yes. When you talk to other producers, you can tell them, depending on whether you want this person involved, you can tell them, look, I've got 2 months left on that shopping agreement. And they might be like, oh, well, I love working with him. Yeah, bring him with you. Or they might be like, well, let's wait for that to expire, and then you can bring it to me.
Okay.
So as long as you're honest with everybody, look, sometimes you get screwed for being honest, but at least no one is watching their back when they're dealing with you. So my feeling is always, I like to, you know, obviously you want to sell the script first. You know, don't ever lead with bad news. Lead with good news and then let them know what the potential, you know, hey, I'm excited about this person. I have a really great producer involved. So obviously, you know, I want to honor what they're doing, and we have 2 months left on our agreement. That will help the producer know you're not going to turn around and try to screw them. And then they might be like, oh, great, well, let's set up a meeting. Or they might be like, well, look, I don't really want to deal with another producer, but when your thing expires, bring it to me. And then you know, if they say that, you don't want to come back to them, to this guy with news about that. You want to just let him continue to do what he's doing. But sometimes it's a good thing for them to know that, like, you have some other opportunities. It might put some fire under them. If they only have 2 months left, it means they haven't sold your script yet. So, so it might put some pressure under them to know that you have some other people that you could potentially reach out to.
Got it. Okay. And one other quick question. I just wanted to know, like, pitching in person, is it a very different situation from, you know, pitching over the phone? I mean, obviously, there's, like, a timer and...
It's much easier to pitch over the phone. I said that backwards. It's much easier to pitch in person. It's easier to pitch in person than over the phone, and it's easier to pitch over the phone than to pitch an email.
I would think it was the opposite.
No, it's less scary to pitch over the phone, but it's harder. Because right now, for example, I can't see your face.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if what I'm saying is changing your world or if you're rolling your eyes. And so that makes it a lot harder for me to adapt my pitch to you. You know, I teach a lot of classes on pitching, and I do a lot of one-on-one work with pitching because pitching is its own topic. But on the simplest level, all pitching is personal. Pitching is about a personal connection, especially when you're a newer writer. It's very rare that you're going to sell the script in the room. You're really building a relationship with someone who's like, oh, yeah, she's cool. So I like to lead, whenever I'm pitching, I like to lead with something quick but personal about myself. Something that, like, opens my heart a little bit and shows them, like, why I wrote this script. And I don't like to rush. I don't like to think about the time limit. I'm not going to waste their time, but I'm going to say, you know, like, if I was talking about my movie, The Matthew Shepard Story, like, I wouldn't just come out and say, you know, Matthew Shepard was a victim of a horrific hate crime. You know, I would tell you, like, you know, back when I was in college, I had a roommate who inexplicably moved out one day, and it actually ended up ending our friendship. And he'd never explained to me why he moved out, but I ended up with this horrible, horrible roommate, and he would just never tell me why he left. And I didn't know if I had done something, if I had upset him. And then years later, I found out that my roommate was actually gay, and he had met a boy and had moved in with him, and that my friend was so afraid to tell me that he preferred to end the friendship than to come out to me. And that was why I wanted to write the Matthew Shepard story. And you see, I haven't even pitched you the Matthew Shepard story yet, but you probably already feel interested in me, and you probably already feel a connection why, like, I'm the right person to write this movie. And so that was a 20 seconds story that allows us to have a personal relationship rather than feel like we're in a business meeting together. So I like to think of pitching as personal, and therefore I would rather pitch in a place where I can look at the person in the eye. There's also a lot you can do physically with rapport. You can actually use your body language to make other people like you and to connect with them. So there's just a lot that you can do in the room that you could do that you can't do over the phone. And there's a lot you can do over the phone that you can't do in email. So for me, the more personal I can get, even though it's scarier, the more likely I am to be successful in what I'm trying to do.
Got it. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you to everybody who participated in this conference call. I hope that you'll all subscribe to my podcast. It's the Write Your Screenplay podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes or on my website, writeyourscreenplay.com. I look at a different movie each week, and I break it down in terms of what you can learn from it as a screenwriter. So I hope you'll check out my podcast. I hope you'll check out our classes. And please check in with me and let me know how your projects are going. My email is Jake, J-A-K-E, at writeyourscreenplay.com. And it may take some time for me to get back to you. I get hundreds of emails, but I really do try to respond to all of them. Thanks so much, and good night.